Hello, Park Street. This is Ryan Gilmer, and you're listening to episode 3. It's day 3 of Lent, and Doug Cooper has graciously agreed to come back and record another episode with me. Thank you, Doug.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Today's passage is, we're going to continue in the book of John, chapter 1, verse 35 through the end of the chapter. It's the beginning of Jesus calling his first disciples, so Doug, would you be willing and able to go ahead and read the passage?
Before I do that, though, what are we calling this? The Lent Project? Does it have a name? I know you youngins don't like naming things.
I don't have a name.
Okay.
For it.
Let's call it the.
Maybe I need to get somebody to name it.
I thought you were calling it the Lent Project.
Well, that's a good start. Yeah. I mean, I'm fine with that.
Belly button project.
No, it's a different kind of Lent.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have an official name. Okay. If anyone wants to officially name this,
okay,
give me a shout out, and we'll listen to any and all reasonable inquiries. All
right, so let's leave that to better minds than mine.
All right,
and I'll read the scripture. This is John 1, 35 through 50, right?
John 1, 35 through 50.
All right. The next day, John was there again with two of his disciples. When he saw Jesus passing by, he said, "Look, the Lamb of God." When the two disciples heard him say this, they followed Jesus. Turning around, Jesus saw them following and asked, "What do you want?" They said, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where are you staying?" "Come," he replied, "and you will see." So they went and saw where he was staying and spent that day with him, and it was about the 10th hour. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, was one of the two who had heard that John had said what John had said, and who had followed Jesus. First thing Andrew did was to find his brother Simon and tell him, "We have found the Messiah," that is the Christ in parentheses, and he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, "You're Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas," which when translated is Peter. The next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, "Follow me." Philip, like Andrew and Peter, was from the town of Bethsaida. Philip found Nathanael and told him, "We found the one Moses wrote about in the law, and about whom the prophets also wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." "Nazareth? Can anything good come from there?" Nathanael asked. "Come and see," said Philip. When Jesus saw Nathanael approaching, he said of him, "Here is a true Israelite, in whom there is nothing false." "How do you know me?" Nathanael asked. Jesus answered, "I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you." Then Nathanael declared, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus said, "You believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree? You shall see greater things than that." He added then, "I tell you the truth. You shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man."
Thank you.
That's my dogs upstairs, if you're hearing that.
Hey, this is...
It's homey.
It is homey. This is not a highly produced endeavor.
Honestly, it's
part of the part of the romance of it.
It is a little homely as well.
Yeah. I like dogs. Dogs are cool.
No, I mean us.
Oh, well, okay.
Me.
Okay.
Me.
One of the things, I just want to say this up front on day three, I guess. One of the things I feel like I've learned over time, like, the Bible to me, when people say the Bible is regressive or that it's, like, just ancient or they dismiss it as totally irrelevant, the more I read the Bible, the more I'm just fascinated with how handcrafted and, like, delicately written and how much genius goes behind it. Like, even if you don't think any of it's true, to me, one of the things I guess we can do as a community and just as we represent Christ in the world is at least to let people know that this is like amazing literature.
Yeah.
It's Shakespeare. It is like amazingly thought out genius stuff.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, when you read it through, you know, I didn't think that 20 years ago when I first started reading the Bible for myself, but over time, as you start to read it and actually, you know, listen to people who know more about it than you do and, you know, learn, there's so much good stuff in here.
Yeah.
And it's so awesome.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, please do.
In some schools, the controversial Jordan Peterson talks about that, and he says he's a pre-Christian, like he says he's going to need about 4 more years.
Yeah.
Before he can really...
He's not quite all the way there, even though he wants to be. Yeah. He's kind of afraid to go the last half.
But half step. Has some of the best teachings on the Bible.
Yeah.
And he talks about like how the Bible is this, like, I'm going to paraphrase, but this river of muddy water that has seeped through rocks and sand and has filtered and filtered and filtered over the years. And so much of it was oral translation. And it's, and the truth and the power of it is filtered through, so it's so concise and so precise and so crafty that he's like, that alone might be enough to point to the fact that there's a God.
Yeah.
That's been crafted. So that, I think that's something we take for granted as people who've been around it a long time.
Yeah. Well, and there's just a lot of, there's cultural stuff, there's things that, you know, some things translate well, some things don't. I mean, there's just there's a lot to getting into understanding what the Bible means. And I mean, you know, people have been debating the Torah for thousands of years. You know, there's a lot there. And I think when you read a passage like this, it's like every word is something.
Yeah.
And the details that are there are there for a reason, and they're there to provoke. You know, it's assuming that you are clued in or knowledgeable about Old Testament readings and other things, and there's just a lot there. So let's start somewhere.
Well, I got, on that note, who, Ryan, this is a quiz, pop quiz, who wrote the book of John?
Doug, many attribute it to the Apostle John.
Yes, and who do we attribute the book of Revelation?
The Apostle John's book.
Yes, so if you have a red letter version of the Bible, you'll notice in the book of John, the first words that Jesus said is, what do you want? And then the next line is, come and you will see. So, like, think about that just in terms of an invitation to any of us. What do you want? Come and you'll see. And then you go back to Revelation, and some of the very last words of Revelation are, in the very last chapter, second to the last paragraph, the Spirit and the Bride say, come. And whoever, and let him who hears say, come. Whoever's thirsty, let him come. And whoever wishes, let him take the free gift of the water of life. So even in that, John, like, has this amazing bracket of, like, what do you want? Are you thirsty? Are you hungry?
It's an appeal to desire.
It's an appeal to the desire. And it also, like, remember yesterday we talked about John the Baptist's loopiness of that lyrical verse that really said about eternity. And here again, John is like, he's bracketing all of Jesus like out to eternity, is him constantly saying, if you're thirsty, if you're hungry, come. And then at the end of all things, you'll be satisfied.
Right. Did you ever spend, I mean, how much of your, I guess, Christian or pseudo-Christian journey was the exact opposite of that, was religion trying to keep you away from what you thought you really wanted. Did you ever have, like, I guess, another reason I ask you that is because I felt like, as a young person, right, in some situations, religion is portrayed as just, like, a way, like, you have to suppress what you desire, you know, in order to follow God, or that you to get the things that you want.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, you got to try to check that at the door.
Yeah.
Whereas what you're saying is, Jesus is saying, what do you want? What is it?
Yeah.
Come and find it.
Well, yeah. And he doesn't say, come follow me. He does to the disciples, bringing this back to this verse. He does say, follow me. But if you follow me, you will see. You know, like that. If we would go into life, into our faith with that kind of simplicity, all that other stuff we talked about yesterday about getting in our heads and being in charge, like, it's all like, that's just all noise. Just come. If you thirst, if you hunger, come and you will see. Just follow. And then in Revelation, there's this amazing thing that says at the end of all days, when we're in that eternal day, that we will see.
Yeah.
And remember Charlie Munson? You remember what he said the first words we'd say in heaven would be?
No, the only thing I remember about Charlie Munson is that he pointed at walls where nothing was there. Well, that he was a bit on the front edge of before my time. But
okay, well, he was like the most amazing. But he said, I remember him saying, when we come into the fullness of the kingdom, our first words will be, like, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And so Jesus is like, in this, what thrills me and what I think, you know, I'm excited about in this is that Jesus is not only inviting his disciples, but we're like seeing this picture of him speaking to us, speaking to all of humanity, even somehow those that came before him.
Yeah.
Saying, come and you'll see.
Yeah. And it's interesting to me, too, when the first part just says, John says, look, the Lamb of God. To his disciples, he says, look, there's Jesus.
Yeah, to his disciples. Yeah.
Right. So, which ends up being, it looks like, Andrew and, mm-hmm. I guess, the Apostle John.
Yeah.
He doesn't name himself, but he kind of
referred.
Right, right.
Sometimes.
And sometimes he does, whatever.
A little cocky.
But anyway, so his two disciples follow Jesus, and then... In both cases, Andrew told Simon, we have found the Messiah. So he kind of takes credit for it, even though John was like, there he is, right there. And then Andrew's like, we found him. And then if you look at verse 43, it says, John is very, like, it's just so, he's making it clear that, right, he says, like, Jesus decided to leave. Finding Philip, he said, follow me. So Jesus found Philip.
Yeah.
Philip goes and tells or talks to Nathaniel and says, you know, Philip found Nathaniel, verse 45, says, we have found the one Moses wrote about. Isn't it hilarious? Like,
yeah.
These guys are like taking, when I play hide and seek with my kids, right? Uh-huh. So like, I go hide and there's 20 spots in the house, right, where I can hide that I can actually get into where Reagan and Lillian can find me.
Yeah.
And I'm hiding in a spot where, for all intents and purposes, I want them to find me in a reasonable amount of time before they lose interest, whatever else. But it's like, these guys had basically people like lead them by the hand right to Jesus. And then they're like, we found him, we found him, we found him. Like, you know, it's like a game of hide and seek with my kids where it's like, we found daddy, we found daddy. It's like, yeah, like, I was finding you.
Right.
Like, this isn't about you finding me. Yeah. Like, I set this whole thing up so that we'd happen to run into each other, you know, when you say, you know, ready or not, here we come.
Yeah.
You know,
we're,
I know where you're going to look, you know, and I put myself there so you could find me. And so I find that this dynamic of this, he's playing off this idea that human beings, you know, there's all this literature, right, about man's search for God and, you know, this kind of stuff, like finding meaning and looking like people just really trying real hard to figure out where is God and meanwhile the whole gospel is about God coming to earth and finding humanity and it's just this hilariously funny
how
we look at it versus how God is looking at it
and I
just love it. I just think it's amazing,
like the control seat again,
right? Like, we found him
no. That's one of, as a worship leader, one of the little cliches that it just grinds my corn is when we say, oh, Jesus really showed up. a long time ago he did. You know, it's we were just...
We recognized that there was a spirit of God here.
Yeah.
Today. We actually maybe paid attention a little bit today.
And that's kind of the same thing. Right. Like, Jesus, hey, I'll bet you every one of these guys had known Jesus. Right?
Yeah.
They probably did. Because they were from the same place. And then all of a sudden, hey, we found the Messiah. No, he kind of found you, you know?
Yeah. And, well, the come and see thing you mentioned shows up twice as well. Yes. You know, he says that to to Andrew and to John in verse 39. Then he says it again to Philip and Nathaniel. And it's so great. Isn't it? This is another thing that's so hilarious about Jesus. So Nathaniel, right, first of all, he says, you know, first thing he hears about Jesus, he says, Nazareth, can anything good come from there? So he's super skeptical, super scoffing, mm-hmm. you know, like, and I always love this because I've lived in Ashland my whole life, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. it's like, I get how yeah. people looked at Nazareth.
Can anything good come from Lexington?
Well, can anything good come from Ashland is what I was going, you know what I'm saying? But like,
but Ashlanders.
That's not, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's yeah, kind of the, absolutely. Ashland is kind of, growing up here is like the quintessential place where yeah. like, in this, like, we're kind of out in the sticks yeah. and like, nothing could really matter here.
We're last place.
Right. It's like, Cleveland gets made fun of, but like, we're even below Cleveland, yeah. you know, like we're an hour outside of Cleveland. Right. So, and I just, you know, that's been an interesting thing, but it's yeah. like, so Nathaniel's like, is anything good going to come out of this little thing?
Yeah.
And then Jesus says, you know, he responds to Nathaniel by calling him, I think your version said, an Israelite in whom there is nothing false.
Right.
So like, Jesus obviously to some degree knows this kind of skeptical, cynical mm-hmm. attitude that yeah. Nathaniel has to him, and yet that's not how he interacts with him. You know, he doesn't come at him as, you know, you're not giving me yeah. my just right, desserts right. here. Like yeah. you're you know
yeah.
you're a sin, whatever. He's like he compliments him.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And then he
sort of like he's saying, "Well, you're a straight shooter, aren't you?"
Yeah.
You know, and like
yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like yeah. But it's like, you know, Jesus comes back. He doesn't defend himself. He doesn't justify himself. He just shows the guy. You know, he kind of is like, that's all it took, you know?
Like, right.
You know, it's amazing. Like, a lot of people, I guess, when they, you know, the process of coming to faith, they tend to have a few hang-ups of like, you know, if God would show me this or prove himself this way or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And it's like, Jesus is like, dude, your expectations are way too low.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, well, and you think I'm something because I did this, like I told you something about yourself that right. you didn't think I knew? Like,
right.
you're going to see this, you know, like, and he makes the reference. So the footnote I have here is from Genesis 28, mm-hmm. which Jacob has a dream about a stairway between heaven and earth.
Uh-huh.
And I guess we could open the passage and go. I don't know a lot about it. But...
Jacob's letter.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's
yeah. I'm gonna go. Keep going.
That one.
But he's like, you know, he's like, you will see heaven open and angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man, which is his reference to himself. He's like, I'm not just like a little magician guy that
yeah.
can do little tricks. Like,
yeah,
dude, right. like I'm way, way above that.
Right. Yeah.
Like, just if you want to follow this ride and see where it goes. Like, get on board, you know, because there's a lot more
yeah.
than what you expect.
Yeah.
And have you, I mean, do you think that's the following Christ is like that? You know, like, I found, like, God, my expectations of God are usually too low, way too low.
Yeah.
In terms of just, like,
yeah.
I just want little things, well, like,
yeah, whatever. I mean, because for me, my expectations of God are so contained by my idea of what I can make possible.
Yeah.
So, like, if I think, well, yeah, I can make that happen, then I think, well, yeah, God can do that. I mean, this sounds heresy, but if I don't think I can make something happen, then I'm like, well, God can never do that. Do you think, I got a question here for you there, Ryan. Do you think that Jesus was like, do you think when he said, I saw you while you were still under the fig tree before Philip called you, was that like a magic trick or was that just like, I've been watching you?
Yeah.
Do you think you've found me? Is it go back to what you said before? Like,
no, I think you're making a good point there.
And that's
yeah.
like, that's why I've called you. So don't like, you're not a stranger to me because I don't take this lightly.
No, I think you're dead on that. Like, I know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I've paid attention
yeah,
to you.
Yeah, and so then, you know, he's kind of saying, well, in one angle would be, well, if you're calling me, like, you must be the king of the
world. Right, right, it's another self. Like, well, clearly you see the value, you see what
yeah,
I bring to the table.
Right, right, right. And then, and I gotta believe, this is the other thing about this passage that, like, if you watch Godspell or something like that, you see this camaraderie of these guys. And these were dudes. Like, and these were dudes that Jesus was a dude, right? And so he probably wasn't humorless.
Yeah.
He probably was, like, had some healthy sarcasm at times. I mean, you see it right here, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, like, just this idea that Jesus is calling you into this relationship where you're going to spend time following him, but also, like, learning how to become the church with these dudes.
Yeah.
And there were dudettes, too, right? I mean, we hear about, they're pretty important.
Yeah.
For all of those of you who care about important things like that, that was, like, you see this camaraderie and this intimacy starting here.
Yeah.
And to me, that speaks, because when I think of the church, I think of this idea of people who know each other.
That's actually really true, and it's one of the things I've actually come to value most about Ashland is when I think about living somewhere else or moving away, knowing people at Park Street and a community that of people that I've come to know over the course of 3 decades of being here,
yeah,
is really unique,
yeah,
and valuable,
yeah.
And it's not always easy for me to see because that's the way my life has always been, but it's something that a lot of people do not have.
Right.
And it is super attractive and valuable.
Well, and it really can, like, in dealings in business, in, you know, your community kind of things, neighborhoods, like, because people see you from all different angles, it helps. I mean, if you allow it to, it helps you stay on the right path.
Yeah.
Because you can't be anonymous.
Right. It's hard to hide.
And that's kind of what I feel like Jesus was saying to Nathaniel.
Well, he says a similar thing to...
Here,
right, and he says the same kind of same thing to Peter, too, right?
Yeah.
He has a personal... And this is the thing, I guess, that I love about this, the book of John, is you're going to start to see Jesus have interactions with all different types of people. People come in contact with Jesus, and they have some reaction, or something. He does something, something happens, and something changes the trajectory of their life. And so... The first thing, you know, Jesus says, you know, you are Simon, son of John. You'll be called Cephas. Like,
yeah.
He immediately changes his name,
yeah,
and his identity.
Yeah.
And says, all right, like, you are who I say you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll give you a new,
right,
like a new way of looking at yourself. Like,
yeah.
And he does the same to Nathaniel. And I feel like the offer is, right, he does the same for us.
Yeah.
He says, look, like, I know you. I know who you are. You know, I'm going to start telling you the things I know about you.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you ask, like, is my bar too low for God? Absolutely. And as I think of, like, worship as a congregation together, I think about that a lot because... Like, you know, I mean, most people that know me know that, like, I really expect this profound connection with God when we worship. And yet, it's rare that we find it. But Jesus says to Nathaniel, who he's just watched a little bit, like, I'm going to tell you what, you're going to see heaven open. You know, and see angels come back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, just because Nathaniel happened to, like, get in the Bible doesn't mean he was privy to experience that we're not.
Yeah.
When, Ryan, have we gone to church and sung Shout to the Lord or whatever, Lion and the Lamb, whatever the new thing? Have we really thought maybe we could see heaven and earth open up?
Yeah.
And when have we ever thought that that would be the main event?
Right.
Not what we're singing or what we're preaching, you know?
Right.
And that there again reflects back on this crazy way that Jesus tends to work with us and say, you know what, like, when you're ready to witness those things, like, when you're truly following me, I'll share them. But as long as you think you're making them happen, you're manipulating things to happen,
yeah,
I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so what happened with the disciples, they had to go through a lot of stuff before they were ready for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And understood it.
No, I'm with you on that. The come and see thing is just such a... I love how Jesus just embraces the skeptic, like the honest skeptic, I guess, you know? Because there are times, I guess, where depending on the attitude with which you are a skeptic, there's a difference between skepticism and cynicism, I suppose. You know, just like, what if the church, like, you know, we are always like, we feel this need to defend, right, our faith, or we have to justify it.
Yeah.
It's just like, embrace the attacks, you know, embrace the skepticism.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Let's just, like, let's talk about it. Let's come at, you know, like, let's, there are people who really are out there who are wondering in their heart, right? Like, if God is this, is as great as, you know, as Christ is portrayed here, you know, the heaven opening, the angels ascending and descending, you know, there's stuff going on, right? You know,
yeah, absolutely.
And being able, not being so worried about, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is being open to skepticism, and skepticism can lead to conversations and dialogue about, you know,
yeah,
about what we believe and why,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's not something we have to bash down doors to defeat skeptics or to, you know, own them in YouTube debates and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like to have conversation with people about why we believe what we believe.
Yeah.
Come and see. You don't, if there's all these things you have, hangups with religion, with Christianity, with Jesus, whatever, come and see, take one more step, you know, and see what you find out. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. I think
just
of a,
get them in,
a,
get,
a,
come in the door, just come in one step and just
of a
take
person
a look.
That like, you know, can maybe have a messy house and they stand at their door and say to people, come in and see, and the house might be messy. Things aren't in order, but there's such a sense of hospitality and openness that people don't see the mess. They just feel the warmth. And,
yeah.
And I think that that's, you know, obviously that's the life that we're made for and bound for in this broken world. There's messiness for darn sure. But that this warmth, this path that Jesus has promised is, you know, overcomes that. And these guys that he's calling do not know what they're getting into.
That's also, yeah. That's,
they do not know. How many of the disciples do we think were martyred?
I think everybody but the Apostle John, right?
Yeah.
He
lucked out.
Well, he got put on an island at night.
I mean, we can debate. For some people, it'd be better to die.
Well, I don't know if I had to choose a cross or being exiled and living to be 90. I don't know what I'd choose, maybe. But it's, yeah, you're right. All 12 of them, 11, I guess, plus, you know, maybe the extra add-on. But they ended up giving, you know, a sacrifice as well in their lives.
They didn't.
Big time.
They followed Jesus pretty quickly. And I wonder if they were baptized by John the Baptist, any of these? They were disciples?
I suppose at least the two, Andrew and John.
I mean, did they, you know, from our last talk, were they ones that said, I do repent, I do get it.
Yeah.
I'm going to join this. And then, like, that opened their eyes.
Yeah.
And they're ready to follow.
Yeah.
Good things. Thinkings.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's cool. I've thoroughly enjoyed this discussion.
Did we do any Lentiness?
I think so. I don't know.
Okay.
There's a difference. I want the nature of these discussions to be serious, but I don't know to the degree they're somber. I'm okay with that, you know, but I don't know the line between, you know, like, seriousness and also fun.
Well, yeah, I mean, in this particular passage, I think there's definitely some serious stuff, but I think the humanity of the interchange and probably not Jesus sounding like an oracle and saying, I saw you under a tree.
Yeah.
We're like, dude, I saw you. I've been watching you. You know, like that's somber because that's the truth.
Yeah.
Like, so, anywho.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to have these talks, chat about the Bible, to enjoy the time we spend together. So.
Well, I think that 3 or 4 other people that listen will be thrilled too.
We'll see. Well, everybody, thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
See ya.